All right. Well, you already saw my Superman thing here. So when I was a kid, I had a comic book that showed Superman being zapped with some kind of energy laser. It wasn't kryptonite. I don't know what it was. But anyway, it had the inverse effect on Superman, meaning that the more he tried to exert power and strength, the weaker he got. And I thought that that would be a good analogy in some respect to really talk about the inherent flaw in human strength. The more that we exert ourselves in pride and self-reliance, remember that's what we talked about last week, the weaker that we are toward God. And it's not like God is zapping us, the analogy fails there, but he does need us to rely upon him. And I talked about last week how God helps those who help themselves. There at least is that idea out there, and that's not a correct idea. God doesn't help those who help themselves. God helps those who turn to him for help. So if you want to help yourself, well, then you have to turn away from God and you're on your own. But if you want to turn to God, then he will help you. And that's what he wants to do. So human power, human achievement, that may attain some measure of success, but it can't hold out forever. So there is a limitation to that. And throughout history, we have studied powerful nations that rose to become great empires and then fell and disappeared. And we see Assyria, for example, in the Old Testament, and Babylon, and then Rome. These are great and powerful nations, greater than we can probably understand looking in hindsight. And yet they fell. And why did they fall? They didn't rely upon God. They relied upon human strength. And there's a weakness and a limitation with that. Weakness can, of course, work in the same inverse proportion. What appears to be weak can actually be very strong. For example, in World War I, which occurred from 1914 and 1918, 9 million people lost their lives as a result of the war. That's a lot of people. At the same time, in 1918, an estimated 50 million people died because of a microscopic invader called the influenza virus. And the age group that was most devastated at that time was the age group of the 20 to 40-year-olds, the ones that you would think would be the hardiest and the most able to endure and survive that kind of onslaught. The faith of a child, small and weak as it might seem, can be greater than the arrogance of an adult. The love of a stranger can be greater in strength than the friendship that is taken for granted. The perseverance of one who is facing disability and obstacles and loss can be stronger than the overconfidence of one who is healthy and well-blessed. And so, most importantly, we see this weakness achieving great strength through the cross, where Jesus was dying on the cross, seemingly in absolute weakness and shame and reproach, and yet having gone through that ordeal and having been buried and then raising from that dead, showing to be more powerful than anything this world has ever seen, overcoming Satan, this world, and death itself. So with God, human strength easily can become weakness and vice versa. He's not intimidated by one, and he's not hindered by the other. So what you and I think about as being weak with respect to, say, our own ministries or the work of the church, that's not a limitation from God or by God. 2 Corinthians 12, verse 9, which I'll get back to later in the lesson, God said to Paul, "Power is perfected in weakness." God's power magnified against the backdrop of human weakness. Very similar in nature to Jesus' light being magnified or amplified against the backdrop of human depravity and worldly darkness when he came into this world. Just amplifies it all the more. And so we tend to measure strength by what we know and what we possess and what we can do. I think all of us have done that. We look at church work, for example, and we say, well, what can I do? Or what can we do? And we tend to think, well, we're limited. We only have so many people. We only have so much human resources or maybe so much money or whatever it might be. God measures strength by what he knows and what he possesses and what he can do. There's a big difference there between those two sources of strength. So presently, it looks like in the world that the evil is gaining the upper hand. I don't know if you've been watching what's been happening to our world lately. It seems that Christians are fighting a losing battle against the godless world. The godless world seems stronger, more organized, better equipped. But if we walk with God, Scripture says that we will overwhelmingly conquer through him. That's a big if in front of that. If we walk with God, then we will conquer. But we won't conquer because of us and our strength. We will conquer because of him and his strength. You know that pride rests upon human strength, human resources, and human ability, and human confidence. We talked a lot about that last week in our lesson on the struggle for humility. These are all faulty foundations, and they will not hold up. I was impressed in 1999, Taiwan had a major earthquake, and a lot of the apartment buildings easily toppled. I mean, just literally fell over, and it wasn't an earthquake that should have caused that much damage. Well, the inspectors went through after the earthquake, and they're looking in the rubble, and they're finding out in the foundations of many of these apartment buildings that had toppled over, the foundations, instead of being filled with concrete and rebar, they were filled with plastic jugs and empty paint cans and paint containers. And they did that, of course, to save money. And so you're looking at this and saying, well, that just doesn't work here. That's not going to hold up against the duress of an earthquake. And that illustrates, in my opinion, the fallacy of human achievement. This is something that may appear to work, human achievement may appear to work as long as it's not tested. But when the storm comes, when the trial comes, it fails to endure and it falls to the ground and people suffer and lives are lost. And in the spiritual context, not only are physical lives lost, but souls are lost as well. And that's a terrible thing to have to say. Satan seems frighteningly powerful, right? He does. And we're not trying to credit him here, but we are respecting the strength that he has. And yet, if you think about it, he derives all of his power and his strength from people. If you want to think about it in this way, we, people, are the plastic jugs in his kingdom. He is securing his foundation of his kingdom with plastic jugs and empty paint cans, and that would, of course, be us, people, that is. In due time, that entire empire is going to come crashing down. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, if you want to read along with me, 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 12 and 13, Paul says, now if any man builds on the foundation, in talking about building a congregation here, building on the foundation with gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, straw, each man's work will become evident, for the day will show it, because it is to be revealed with fire, and the fire itself will test the quality of each man's work. So here we have, even if a congregation is built with inferior teaching, any teaching that is not the Word of God, it's not going to last. It may get propped up, so to speak, in good weather. It may survive for a while times are good and favorable. But when the storm comes, when the challenging comes, when the testing comes, then it's not going to be able to survive as a genuine church that is of God or of Christ. And of course, we mentioned last week, Matthew chapter 7, verse 24 through 27, here was the foundation of people's souls. Every person gets to choose to either build upon the solid foundation, upon the rock, or build upon the unstable foundation of the world. So one lasts, the other one is going to fail. One is built on the immovable power of Jesus Christ, the other one is built upon, well, you guessed it, plastic jugs. And it's just not going to last forever. And the storm is coming. The path of least resistance will not provide for those people the security and the solidity that they were looking for. Some of you might know from history, maybe you stayed awake in your history classes there in high school, I don't know. I found it interesting. But anyway, 19th century, Alexis de Tocqueville visited America. And he was amazed by what he found. Not just a great land, but he also found great people and a great system. He found excellent character and excellent ethics. And he said this line that has reverberated ever since then. He says, America is great, but only because it is good. And if America ever ceases to be good, it will also cease to be great. And that's a line that you probably have seen pop up here now and then, maybe on social media, by those who are watching what's happening to our country right now. But what he's getting at here is that strength, there is strength, great strength, in virtue. And whenever we talk about virtue, we're really talking about things that are of God or like God. Goodness, virtue, moral integrity, rather, these are all divine attributes. And when people practice divine attributes, then they are successful because of the divine influence that they allow to govern their lives. This is the source of their strength. It's not the things they are or people they are rather, or the things that they do. In other words, it's not in themselves or their accomplishments. It's actually in the divine influence manifested through the divine attributes. Whatever comes from God is superior than what comes from people. But if you take all that divine influence away, and take away all that divine attributes away, and take away all that virtue, then the nation, whatever nation it is, just becomes a house of cards. It rots from within, and it eventually implodes or is ripe for takeover. And what are we seeing today? We're seeing just that. We're seeing a nation that is really throwing virtue over its shoulder and wanting to pursue lesser things instead. And we're seeing people who are praising criminal and corrupt and evil behavior and then thinking that we're going to maintain as a successful nation. Well, all we have to do is go back in the Old Testament and see that just doesn't work. So whether it's America or any other nation that removes godly influence from how it does business, so to speak, then it is going to fall. America's success has never been in human politics. It's always been in a moral fortitude. And when that is gone, that there will be nothing left but plastic jugs to hold up this nation, and that will not survive during the earthquake. And by the way, the earthquake is coming, and I'm not talking about a physical earthquake. So it all begs the question, what is the source of your strength? Think about that. What is the source of your strength? I know what the answer is among Christians generally. We're all going to say, well, God is the source of our strength. And I want to believe that. I really do. But I'm not certain that that's always the case. I'm not asking, what is the source of your strength if something bad happens to you? That's not what I'm asking. What I'm asking is, what is the source of your strength even in good times, even in good weather, so to speak? What is the source of your strength in times of peace and comfort? My observation over years of watching people, including myself, many Christians talk a good talk, but not everyone really understands the nature of the subject at hand. God is not saying to us, I will be your safety net if or when you fall. Because I think that's a lot of times what we want. We want to just kind of go on autopilot, go on our own steam, make our own decisions. And when we get in trouble, what do? We fall to our knees in prayer and we beg God for help. Please get me out of this pickle or this scrape or this, this situation that I got myself into. Here's what God is saying in essence. I need you to jump and trust me. Instead of waiting for you to fall and then rescuing from the fall that you created, I need you to jump in faith and trust that I will take care of you. These are two very different perspectives, and they create two very different people. This person over here trusts in God only when he chooses to. This person over here leaps in faith because God asked him to, and he trusts that God will take care of him. However, God chooses to take care of him. So a Christian's strength doesn't come from merely reading scripture, going to church and singing songs, taking the Lord's Supper, or even listening to sermons. But really it comes from a deep and honest and humble trust that God will take care of him, not just in death, but also, maybe even more importantly, in life. I say more importantly because if you're taken care of by God in life, then whatever happens to you in death is already a done deal. It's already taken care of. You're already guaranteed a life with God. So divine strength is not something God gives to us to use or apply at our own discretion. I think a lot of us have gotten that into our heads. I know I have for many years thought that way, that I can just kind of plug into God like an electrical outlet, like God's there to plug into and I derive strength to use that strength for whatever ambition or project or, form of ministry that I had in my head. And that's not what God is teaching us. That's not what God ever taught us. That's just what Chad thought God was teaching us at the time. What I understand God to say now is that we should be more of a conduit. That is, if you think about a pipe as a conduit, something that moves something, liquid or whatever, from one point to another. Or electricity, as you see electrical conduits that I'm using here, moving something from one point to another, God's strength toward the application of that strength. I'm the conduit, so I'm the thing that God uses to get his strength to wherever he needs it to be done. Now, do I benefit in the process? Of course I do. The conduit always is blessed in this case. right? Ephesians 3:16, Paul says that we are to be strengthened with power through his Spirit in the inner man. That means through his Spirit. In other words, not just him giving us things to do and then we take it from there and run with it, but rather him through his Spirit and through us as the conduit, applying that strength to whatever needs to get done. It's a very different perspective than what I used to have. It's a much better perspective than what I used to have. Or you can think about this verse here, Philippians chapter 4, verse 13, where it says, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. In my opinion, this is one of the most abused, misunderstood, and misapplied verses in the New Testament. Because to what this means to many people, or what this means to many people is this, that whatever I choose to do, God will give me the strength to do it. Right? That's how it's often used. And if you've got social media and people are posting it, chances are that's how they're using it, because that's very common. That's not what it says. What it says is what you see on the screen. Whatever God gives you to do, he will also provide you the strength to do it. So what changed here? Well, what changed is the person who says, God's going to give me strength to apply to my project, whatever project I decide upon. That's one perspective, kind of arrogant one, really. The other perspective is the humble perspective that says, God is telling me what to do, and in doing so, providing the strength for me to do it. Who's in charge here? God is in charge. Who's in charge of this one over here? That's me, or you, or people. So it's just a shift in paradigm, if you will, to making God, or letting God, really be in charge there. And that's really what comes to our mind when we think of this passage here in 2 Corinthians 12, verse 9 and 10, which is probably one of the more familiar passages in the New Testament, but again, not necessarily always understood. Paul has this thorn in the flesh, and he entreats God three times to have it removed. That's what it says prior to this. And here's God's response. My grace is sufficient for you. And by sufficient, meaning it'll take care of whatever needs to get done. That's what he means here. For power is perfected in weakness. Here's Paul's response to that. Most gladly, therefore, I will rather boast about my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. Therefore, I am well content with weaknesses, he means there, with insults, with distresses, with persecutions, with difficulties, for Christ's sake. And that's the qualifier to all this. Not just someone beating up on you because, well, you made a bad left-hand turn or something like that, right? We've all been there. So it's not about that. It's not about you making a mistake and then someone criticizing you. This is for Christ's sake, meaning something that you're doing for the Lord's sake. And you're going to get all kinds of affliction or some kind of antagonism because of that. He says, for when I am weak, then I am strong. Why? Because God is working through me. Even though I am weak, God is working through me. We tend to think of strength as being God's ability to remove problems. And it's true that he can do that when he wants to. But that's sometimes where we leave it. Paul says that God's strength is for the endurance of problems. Not the removal of them, but the getting through them. And so what's the objective here? Paul's the conduit. Here's God saying, I need this thing here to get done. Paul says, but I'm being afflicted and I'm asking that you would remove that problem. God is saying in so many words, you're the conduit that I'm working through to get this thing done. Don't worry about what happens to you. I'll take care of you. And I'm not going to remove that thing that is bothering you. I'm going to allow that to stay there because that doesn't interfere with what needs to get done. Hopefully you're going over in your mind already some personal application to what I'm talking about. Paul is not saying God's strength will transform my weaknesses into great power. That's not what he's saying. What he's saying is that God's strength will succeed despite my weaknesses. Those are two different things. Again, God doesn't have to take away the problem in order for his will to be accomplished through you. He just needs you to conform or to cooperate, or to submit to him in order for him to address the situation. When believers act no differently than unbelievers, then we're just fooling ourselves and we're actually disgracing the gospel. So we can't do the same thing that the world does. you know, just dropping to their knees and calling upon really a foreign god to deliver them every time they get in trouble. Because you know that's what happens, right? Every time we get a tornado or a hurricane or earthquake or, you know, planes flying into buildings or whatever it might be, then people drop to their knees and they ask, God, please deliver us from this. And what they're really saying is, please help us to return to normal. Because this thing upset us and kind of threw everything out of balance. That's not helping them, and that doesn't help us when we do the same thing. So to live by faith doesn't mean just to have a belief system or a congregation to call your own. What it really means is to trust in God's willingness and his ability to help you regardless of you or your weaknesses or your circumstances. That's what that means, which is what we've been saying. Think about this passage here in Ephesians 3, verse 20 and 21. Paul says, now to him who is able to do far more abundantly, I think the King James Version says exceedingly abundantly. Basically, Paul had to create a construct, a grammatical construct, because it didn't exist until then. And so far more abundantly, beyond all that we ask or think, according to the power that works within us, to him be the glory in the church and in Christ Jesus to all generations forever and ever. Amen. That's how we should look at things. That we have our plans, we have our projects, we have our ministries, and we should get busy doing them, but always with a perspective that God has his plans, his projects, and his ministries for us, and those take precedent over ours. Those are more important than ours. And if he wants us to drop one thing in order to pursue what he has given to us, then that's what we should do. And if we think we've got God all figured out and as to what he's doing through us, well, the fact is you probably haven't any more than I have. So God is very powerful, to say the least, and he is able to perform and even outperform us in every sense. And only, of course, if you believe in his power and allow his spirit to do his work in the inner man, will you benefit from that. Let's say something about weakness. We've been talking about strength here. Let's say something about weakness. And I'm using weakness as Paul used it in the passage we looked at in 2 Corinthians 12. Really, a weakness is a human limitation of any kind in comparison to Jesus. He could reveal divine truth. You can't do that. I'm pretty confident of that, okay? So you and I can't do that. We have a weakness there. He could walk on water. I can't do that, neither can you. He lived without sin, but you did not live without sin because that's why we're here, right? It's because we are sinners and we need God's forgiveness. So there's some things that he has done that we have not done, and we need to recognize that. Weakness in this context here are not things that we chose. They're things that are inherent with us. For example, say someone says, well, I'm weak because I cannot study the Bible well. Well, that's really not accurate. It's because you're not studying the Bible well, because anyone can study the Bible, and anyone can study the Bible well. But if you're being weak because you're choosing not to, well, then that's on you. That's not the weakness that Paul is talking about. Or say someone says, well, I just cannot share the gospel with others, and that's my weakness. Well, that's a chosen weakness, because you can share the gospel. Now, how you share it and when and so forth, that remains to be seen, but don't say that you can't do it, because you most certainly can. Or someone says, well, I can't be a great husband and great wife because, you know, I'm just not the man or the woman that I see in other people. Well, that's not true, because actually you can be a great husband or a great wife. You're just choosing not to, if we're going along with our hypothetical here. So don't confuse choices with inherent situations or inherent circumstances. A lot of people choose to be weak, quite honestly. And it's true that others may be better or more proficient at something that we do or are able to do, but that we're not talking about genetics here. We're not talking birth defects. We're not talking about impossibilities. Sin is a choice. It is not an accident. Faithfulness also is a choice. It's not something you stumble into. And when we choose to be weak, what we're doing is we're giving ourselves crutches and excuses and false alibis. And all of that, as you know, is based on emotions and opinions, not facts and evidence. Now, I want to be clear. I'm not pointing fingers at any person or situation when I say those things. But I am pointing at human nature. And I know human nature really well because, well, I'm human and I have a human nature and I'm very familiar with that. So I know how we operate, so to speak. I know how we justify and rationalize, as we talked about in class this morning. I get that. I understand that. But sometimes we choose to be weak. Or sometimes we think our strengths are stronger than they really are, and we're not relying upon God. It's kind of what the Corinthians faced when Paul talked to them in the reading that we had here, 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 26, 27, where he says, "For consider your calling there, brethren, that there were not many wise according to the flesh, among you that is, not many mighty, not many noble, but God has chosen the foolish things of the world and the weak things of the world to shame the things that are wise and are strong." Well, who's he talking about? He's talking about the Corinthians themselves. I mean, think about that. What he's really saying in so many words is, y'all think you're pretty strong here, but the fact is, in the world's eyes, you're all pretty weak. And yet, God has chosen weak people, as the world sees them, to be sources of great strength when God works through them. So as you see here, God can do great things through weak people. And we should not forget that God doesn't need your every human weakness or inadequacy to be removed before he can use you. If he did, then we'd all have to be perfect people, flawless people, in order for anything to get done in the church. And you know that's just not the case. Every one of us have human weaknesses, every single one of us. And yet God can accomplish a whole lot through all of us, through each of us. God's not asking you to be flawless. Only his Son is flawless. But he is asking you and me to believe in him and his Son to the point where we're no longer worried and fretting about our weaknesses, but rather trusting and boasting in God's strength. Because that's how he ends the chapter there. Just as it is written, he says, "Let him who boasts, boast in the Lord." There's your boast right there. It's not wrong to boast, as long as you're boasting in the right thing. Not in yourself, but in the Lord. Philippians chapter 4, 11 and 12, Paul says, "Not that I speak from want for himself. I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I'm in. I know how to get along with humble means, and I also know how to live in prosperity. In any and every circumstance, I've learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both of having abundance and suffering need." I think the key part in that whole verse, at least for this lesson, is the "I have learned" part. I have learned these things. And what he's saying there is that having learned those things, he has come to a more mature or enlightened perspective. And that's something that we all need to see for ourselves. What is the mature perspective? What does the enlightened perspective look like? Well, it comes through learning through experience and learning through reading and learning through studying people like Paul. It's not a crime to be weak. I want to make that really, really clear. It's not a crime to be weak any more than it's a crime to be human and saddled with human limitations. We need, however, to learn how to rely on God, just like Paul had to learn the secret of all those things that he talked about. And that's not going to happen in the course of a lesson. It's not going to happen in a weekend or a week or a month or even a year. It's going to happen over time. And that's what I'm hoping that we're all in the process of doing right now. All of us at different levels, that may be, but all of us in the process of learning how to rely more and more upon God. At the same time, while it's not a crime to be weak, it is a crime. In other words, it is a sin to refuse to be strong by trusting and relying and believing in God's ability to perform, even when we don't see that performance in its clarity, don't understand it entirely, or don't have it explained to us. You don't know all what God's doing through you right now. I'm just amazed at the stories I hear over time of Christians, how they affected other people's lives, sometimes without their knowledge, without their conscious knowledge of what they did. And yet they did some good deed or said some good word or showed some good act of kindness, some benevolence, and that touched people's lives down the road, had a great and positive rippling effect. And I'm certain that all of you are doing that right now in some respect or another, any of you who are faithful. You're doing that right now. Sometimes people say, Christians say, well, if I were stronger, I'd have more to offer God, and because I'm weak, I'm useless. I've heard that in so many different ways over the years from so many different people. And the fact is, that is just an opinion. That is not a true statement. That's not a truth. It's an opinion. And I can say that with confidence because God can exercise his strength through and despite your weakness, whatever it might be. Basically, what I'm saying is don't tell God what you can or can't do when he is capable of exercising great strength and power through whatever weakness you have. Don't handcuff him to your reservations and your limitations and your finite thinking, just as like I used to do myself. Don't handcuff him to that and say, well, God, I can't do this, and therefore you can't either. Sorry about that. That's not showing faith, and that's not showing submission to him. So you have to ask yourself at this point, what are your weaknesses? What do you consider to be your weaknesses? And especially, what do you cite, if anything? Or what do you point to? Or what do you always think about that limits your service to God? Like when some preacher gets up in a pulpit and says, this is what Christians need to be doing, and you're sitting there in your mind saying, well, yeah, other Christians need to, but I can't because fill in the blank. What is that fill in the blank thing that you're putting in there? Because whatever it is, that's your opinion. If it's something that God has asked you to do and you're filling in the blank with something that you can't do because you're weak, that's your opinion going against and really confronting in a bad way God's reality. God is saying, I can do great things for you. And you're saying, yeah, I get that, God, but maybe that works for other people. But for me, here I am, your weak but humble servant. Well, that's not humility. Because humility is all about subjection and yielding to God. And here's a person who's basically being arrogant to God and telling God what God should know. Kind of like Moses arguing with God there about, you know, whether he can be the mouthpiece for God or not. And remember how that ended? God was very angry at Moses. And what would he be about us? Well, very angry. God's power is perfected in weakness. His power amplified, magnified, marvelously highlighted against the backdrop of human weakness. I mean, we could spend all day, I'm not going to, but we could spend all day going through the Bible and looking at time after time, occasion after occasion, instance after instance, where people serving God were weak and God worked through their weakness to get his work done. Think about that. Why is it any different today? Just because our story isn't being recorded in a thing called the Bible doesn't mean that it's not happening today. All who trusted and honored God also magnified and glorified his power, and in time they were perfected because of that. Not because of themselves, but because they allowed God to work through them. The fact is, God accepts us in and even despite our weaknesses. Jesus doesn't say, well, be strong and remove all your weaknesses, and then I can use you. I'll find a place in my kingdom for something for you to do. And it's very possible, too, no one wants to hear this, but it's very possible that God allowed you to have certain weaknesses, specific weaknesses, in order to humble you because he wants to save your soul, and he knows that if you didn't have that, then you would be resting upon your pride and your own ability and your own resources. But now with this weakness, say this thorn in the flesh, now he has your attention. Whereas the proud man of the world, who has a much stronger view of himself there, doesn't rely upon God at all, and that could have been you. So don't begrudge the weaknesses that you have and think, oh, God is, you know, pressing upon me, imposing upon me, and has it in for me. It may not be that at all. It may contribute to your salvation. It may be the very thing that saves you as far as keeping you focused and fixated on what is right. Humility is all about letting God have his way with you to mold you and form you and transform you into whatever he needs in order to magnify himself through you. Now, if you're wondering if you're benefiting through all that, of course you are. You're the conduit, and the conduit always benefits because it's the carrier of all those good things, and God will bless that person who does so. Not only that, but he's preparing you for the life to come. And I have no idea what he'll have us do then. But we need to get prepared for that now. Remember my opening scenario there, the comics, Superman, the more strength he exerted, the weaker that he became. Kind of that inverse proportion thing. Again, it does illustrate the paradox of human effort in contrast to the power of God. The more we exalt ourselves, the more we exert ourselves, the more we rely upon ourselves, the spiritually weaker we actually become. The more we rely on selves, the less fit we are for God's service. And the more we trust in our own strength and our own decisions, the less useful we are for God's kingdom. Well, here's the other side of that. The more we rely on His strength, now it doesn't matter what we lack in ourselves. Our weaknesses do not diminish His strength. God's strength does not diminish just because we have a whole bunch of weaknesses. God's strength never diminishes. Even though He puts out great strength, the source of that strength never is depleted. Now, that goes against all laws of nature, laws of science, and even my own comprehension. But it's true nonetheless, and that's what makes Him God and makes you and I human. Because we are not that person. He is able to work through us to accomplish His will. But the only time we benefit is when we consent and we comply. So I'm asking, what about you? Do you trust in God's strength to fulfill your earthly ministry? God's given you some things to do. Are you doing them? Or are you saying, well, I could if I weren't so weak, fill in the blank, with this problem, beset with this trouble, if I didn't have this infirmity, if I didn't have this, you know, albatross around my neck, whatever you think that is. You know that God can work through you despite all those things? He's not going to give you something impossible to do. He's going to give you possible things to do, but they are possible because of His strength. Or are you going to choose to use your weaknesses like a crutch and then hobble around like a crippled person? You know that Christ did not die on the cross and raise from the dead so that you could represent Him as a helpless cripple. That's not why He did that. He wants you to represent Him well. Put your faith in Him. But either way, it is your choice. It always has been, always will be. My strong advice to you, as well as it is to myself, is to choose wisely. Choose wisely. That's my invitation to you this morning. If you are so moved to come forward this morning as a result of that invitation, this would be your opportunity to do so. We're still allowing that, by the way, despite what's going on. So if you want to come forward this morning, that would be your decision. As we stand and sing the song Aaron has selected for us.